Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 16, catching up with Jenny from Brooklyn, New York, after the jump. And today, it's May 16th, 2023. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Nav.
So nice that you're here again. For the ones that haven't listened to episode 10, where you do your story, could you briefly share with the audience, very briefly, your benzo story up till episode 10?
In the spring of 2021, I was having a terrible bout of insomnia. I had been having insomnia for some time, but it was just getting worse. I had many nights where I couldn't get more than 2 hours sleep. I never had trouble falling asleep, but I never could stay asleep. And after about a few months of that, and it was just getting worse and worse, I started to develop a lot of anxiety because I was exhausted during the day. I'm a mom. We had had COVID. I had closed a business. A lot of personal issues going on, death in the family, separation, etc. And everything just piled up, and without sleep, I mean, anybody who's ever had a problem with insomnia knows that if it goes on for a long time, it's just really debilitating. And then I developed so much anxiety because I was having trouble keeping up with everything in my life. And I ended up going to a doctor, and my doctor, and he recommended I go to a psychiatrist. So I went to a psychiatrist, and they put me on a benzo. And it was a name of a medication that I wasn't familiar with. Actually, the first medication they put me on was Xanax, which I had heard of and had taken from time to time, very, very rarely in times of acute stress, maybe 1 or 2 days in a row, and then nothing more than that. And I never had an issue with it because that's how it's meant to be taken, is very, very sparingly. And you will not have a problem with it if you do it that way. But the doctors put me on it on a daily basis, and I had no idea that that could pose a problem. I was taking it for sleep and anxiety, and over time, I quickly built a tolerance to the dose they gave me. I was checking in with a psychiatrist about it, and she was just upping my dose. It'll be good if people listen to the other episode I did, because I think it gives so much information about what really happened to me, much more so in depth. But briefly, I basically was on Xanax, then I was switched over to a longer acting benzo called Ativan. And between April and December of that year, I was increased in my dose. I was also given antidepressant medication, and I didn't respond to it very well. I didn't think that it was helpful. I was getting worse and worse. I was feeling horrible, crying, mood swings. The insomnia wasn't getting better. And honestly, I really thought that I was declining in my own mental health. I was exhausted. I was sleep deprived. And I had a lot of stressful life situations. So it was impossible for me to recognize that actually the medication was the cause of me getting worse. So I was really going along with what the doctors were telling me about, you know, that I needed to take more medication. And ultimately, I went through so much, which I'll discuss, you know, with you today. But I went through so much that I just got to the point where I said, I need to have a second opinion. I spoke to another doctor, and when he looked at my history and saw that I was at that point taking 6 milligrams of Ativan daily and still feeling terrible. He told me that, the issue could possibly be the medication, and that's when I started to do my own research and found, that it definitely was the medication, and every symptom and every story was exactly like my story, and that's when I knew I had to get off the benzos.
Yeah, so when we did episode 10 together, you were still tapering. Can you share with the audience what happened after the episode?
At that time, I had gone to stay at home with my families up in Massachusetts, away from New York City, so that I could continue my taper because I was just completely debilitated and super sick. And I think I was on about 1.5 milligrams of Ativan at the time, and there are a lot of different opinions about how to do a taper, and I really came to find that it just was a matter of my own. I call it a body led, and I think people do use that term. It's like I basically never stabilized. I was never able to feel okay on my dose. I always felt really sick. And when I say sick, and I re-listened to the earlier podcast that we did together so I could remember what I talked about, because this is really compromising to our neurological system. So when I say that I was really sick, I mean, I can hardly remember a lot of patches of time of going through this, and that's why I had to listen to our interview together again so I could figure out what I had said and where I was at that time. So I was completely exhausted, body tired, weak. I was severely underweight. I could barely walk upstairs. I had constant trembling in all of my body. I had muscle spasms, muscle jerks, which is like, your leg or your elbow or your shoulders will just move on their own. I had skin rashes and hair falling out. I had nightmares, insomnia, hot sweats and cold chills just round the clock, in terrible brain fog. I mean, I really don't remember a lot of things that happened at that time. So
But can you remember how you went from 1.5 milligrams of Ativan slash lorazepam to zero and your jump?
I mean, yeah, sort of. So that's why I was saying I had to, I don't know, I think I was on about 1.5, and body led just means when those symptoms aren't so severe that you really can't function. So I would reduce based on those symptoms not being super acute, and just I just couldn't live with that going on and on and on for months. So I other people stabilize where the symptoms die down almost to a point where they can go to work and do stuff, but I just couldn't. So my taper was faster than most people's, because I just felt like if I'm going to be like this on the medication, I might as well just be like this off of it. So I was tapering about 0.25 milligrams, a quarter of a milligram every 2 weeks, I would say, was about what I was doing. But I was checking in with myself, and if my symptoms were too severe, I would wait longer. So that was November 5th, and I just kept doing that up until early December. And then it was holiday season, and I have a child and my family and everything, some birthdays, my birthday. And then New Year's. So I just decided to hold on the taper because every time you cut, your symptoms get worse for a while. And for me, it was about 5 days of really bad, bad symptoms, and then a week and a half feeling like, okay, I'm plateaued out and I'm not as severe. I can cut again. So I held for December, and then after New Year's, I resumed the taper again, cutting 0.25 milligrams. And I was doing that through January. And at the third week of January, I was basically just taking a crumb of a pill because these pills don't come in tiny, tiny dosages. So we're forced to figure out how to cut them, and that's not easy. Pills just crumble
Right.
when you cut them.
And
There's pill
yeah.
cutters.
And for people that haven't listened to episode 10, maybe it's good to know, and I know this obviously, is that you did try a crossover to Valium. You were misinformed into doing that, and that really messed you up. So you decided on tapering the Ativan directly.
Yeah, the Valium had a different effect on me, which was much worse. I developed agoraphobia. That was the main symptom that I just couldn't manage because I was afraid to leave my apartment, and I never had that on Ativan, so I just went back to the Ativan. And anyways, by the middle t towards the middle of January, I was just basically eyeballing my dose and looking at these little crumbles of this white pill, and I just felt like I was ready to get off. It was a bit early in my calendar. I could have gone on until mid-February, but I just decided one morning that I wasn't going to take my dose and I would just see how I was feeling throughout the day. I ended up not feeling any worse that day, so I just kept going, saying, okay, tomorrow if I feel worse, I'll take my dose. But each day, and then on the third day, I thought, okay, then I'm not taking this anymore, and that was it. So that was the end of me having to take the medication.
And how was that for you, this jump and not having to need to take the meds anymore?
I think like the reaction my body had to it and everything was no different than how I had felt the last 3 weeks on the medication. I didn't feel well, but I didn't go into acute like I had in the past when I tried to get off the medication. So it was non-eventful in terms of like having some kind of severe reaction, but it was a relief. Because one of the things that's really paradoxical about this whole experience is that we hate this medication. We don't want it at all, but we are relying on it so much that it's really scary because it's a controlled substance and the doctors can at any time decide that they don't want to prescribe it to you anymore. So, or you could, God forbid, lose pills, drop them down the toilet, or misplace them, whatever. And then you don't have enough, and then you could get very sick. So I was just so relieved to not need to have a prescription anymore. That was a big deal for me. I was like, oh God, this is like all I've ever wanted. I never have to see a bottle of pills again. I never have to ask a doctor for it. I never have to. I had trouble going from state to state. I was in New York and I went to Massachusetts and I couldn't get a refill on my prescription because I was in a different state. Then I had to find a new prescriber in Massachusetts. It's really a crazy, crazy situation. But that was the main thing. I was so happy and I'm still so happy never to need a prescription again.
I can imagine. And can you tell the audience what happened after you had quit the benzos? What were your symptoms? How did that go?
Well, like I said, it didn't get worse. I did use some supportive medications that I figured out on my own or just through going through the forums. At night, I would take a valerian capsule, which is a natural supplement, but it does work on the same,
GABA.
the receptors in the brain that medication we use is working on. So ultimately, you don't want to take a valerian when you're trying to heal your brain, but I took it as a precaution and I knew that I would only take it for a short amount of time. And I don't know if it did or didn't do anything. I recommend the bottle said to take two a day. I took one at night and I also took like a marijuana sleep gummy, and I don't know if that helped to relax me or not. I mean, these symptoms are so severe. It causes me to have an overproduction of adrenaline and cortisol, which are the anxiety chemicals that our body produces. And I was just flooded with that like 24/7. So it just was hard to tell if what things I was doing were helping or not, but they weren't making anything worse. So I was taking that at bedtime, and I was still having like the constant round the clock sweats, which are really stressful. I mean, I was be soaking my bed sheets and just covered in sweat, and then chills. And I think probably many people listening have had the flu and or something similar, and that's like, but it happens about 3 times an hour around the clock. It's crazy. A lot of fear and anxiety, panic and sadness, depression, crying, body aches, joint aches, like just a lot of symptoms, weakness. But I just, had already been feeling all of that, so it wasn't worse. It was just the same, and that lasted for a few weeks, and then it slowly subsides. It's not gone. I actually still have all these things, but much less. And the difference is also the amount of things I am able to do. So, I'm definitely able to do more, and I was able to do more little by little after I jumped, including like starting to exercise, starting to cook meals, and do things to take care of myself, go for a haircut. And before that, I was just basically surviving and trying to keep myself okay and sane.
Yeah, and I can maybe presume that, once you've jumped and you're not symptom free, that, the big question is, when will it get better? And you're not tapering, so there's nothing to be done about that. So that must be kind of an unknown, must be unpleasant, I think, that you just don't know when you're gonna heal, when you're gonna get windows and stuff. Was it hard?
Yes. I mean, I think that it is there is what I've mentioned before, the protracted withdrawal syndrome. And that is basically, it's known that the majority of people who in our benzo community do not get well the day they get off of their medication. And the best case scenario is 6 to 18 months. That's generally what people report, that they feel better at around the 6 month mark, and maybe could consider themselves well by the 18th month mark. That's just a basic idea because everybody's so incredibly different, and they don't all heal at the same rate. And there's people who feel very well and then have setbacks that are either just inexplicable, or because they got COVID, or because they had a stressful incident or anything like that. And so the big thing that's troubling is that you have no idea when you're gonna get really well. And it's sort of like being in a jail in a way, and not knowing when you're going to be released, because you just can't really plan your life. You can't really know what to expect, and it's pretty tough. You really have to like practice being in the present moment, being just taking it day by day, which is really hard for me. I think it's hard for most people, but I definitely struggle with it because I've always been a person who plans a lot, and would say, well, this summer we're gonna go away and do this trip, or I'm gonna do this project for work on this such and such a date. And this is like, I can't really do that. I can't do anything like that. I can't commit to very much because I just don't know how I'm gonna feel. So all I can really do, the first thing I started to do when I was still really sick and weak was I tried to sort of identify what would help me heal and what would not allow me to heal. And what I noticed that was giving me setbacks was stimulus, too much stimulation of any kind, even if it was positive, but of course, if it was negative. So, stressful emotional interactions would cause me to have much worse shaking and trembling and panic and stress. And even exciting things, if I did still this way, if I do something very, very stimulating, like very exciting, I will the next day I will feel very exhausted and my body will tremble a lot more. And so it's really almost like you have to pace yourself with everything you do and be super mindful to avoid stressful interactions, which is fine with me because I don't like stressful interactions in any way.
Yeah, so a few questions that I'm just, curious about, and if you ever feel uncomfortable, let me know. Then
Sure.
we can pause or whatever. So my first question would be is because I know your story and I know you, is basically a few years ago you went in because you were having some difficulties and you weren't sleeping, and instead of getting help, you get poisoned with benzodiazepines. Now that you're off the benzodiazepines, have you had time to reflect on, what made you go and seek help, and like the root cause of you when you going in to get help?
Yeah, I mean, it was the insomnia because I've had anxiety before in my life, and I've even had those short bouts of depression. I think everybody has, but they were always manageable. I've always worked, I've always run a household, and I've been raising a child for 16 years now. I've never like felt that. I mean, I have. Like I said, I have had been prescribed Xanax, but in 30 years, maybe I took 10 pills or something. So it was definitely the insomnia that was causing me to seek.
So let's just imagine theoretically you would go back in time. Is there anything you would have done differently?
Oh my God, I never would have gone to a psychiatrist. I never, I mean, I went to my general practitioner, my primary care physician, and he sent me to a psychiatrist. And it was because I was talking about the anxiety. I guess I didn't realize necessarily that the anxiety could have been being made so much worse by the insomnia. But no, I mean, if I could go back in time, I would just not sleep. I mean, nothing could be as bad as this experience. Nothing. I mean, it was like a terrible nightmare. That was, something I thought I would like to talk about today is like when we talk about this and we describe it just can't even be described. It's indescribable, and the amount of crazy things that happened to me during this is just one after the other, like traumatic event of being totally gaslighted by my doctors and told that I'm sick and, thinking I'm going crazy and being treated like a drug addict and just so many horrible things. And you just kind of keep going because you don't know what else to do, and the whole world is telling you that you're sad and you're crazy and
I agree. I think it's the benzo thing for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's like a cascade of traumas. A cascade of
Yeah.
traumas. The suffering from benzo withdrawal is a trauma. Not being believed is a trauma. Getting your prescriptions is a trauma. It's just so traumatic, all of it.
Yeah, you suffer like I've always been athletic. I was in the greatest shape. I was swimming every single day. I was running around doing long 10, 12-hour work shifts. I was, having fun with my friends and going to the park and going to parties and going to the beach with my daughter and just like driving to weekend trips and just everything fun. And then This thing like took it all away. It took everything away. I cannot count like how many things it took from me. And people say to me, why didn't you sue your doctor and things like this? And I'm like, I am till this day still trying to just survive this. Like, I mean, sue the doctor. I can barely form sentences many often, like right now. I struggled at one point to sign my name on a form to get out of the hospital. I mean, it literally looks like a 110-year-old woman wrote my name on a piece of paper. It's like a matter of survival. Honestly, like just preparing myself to do this interview, I realized like I got anxiety because a lot of this has just been me just dealing with these traumas by just putting them behind me, not examining them, not processing them at all, but just being like, okay, that's crazy. That just happened. I tell you, when I went into the detox, it's a for-profit thing where they get all these drug addicts and alcoholics in there and they make a ton of money. And so they really want to send you to this partnered firm where it's a rehab. I said, I don't need rehab, where they teach me not to seek my drugs. I don't want my drugs. There was so I was, saying I want to leave, and they were like, well, we're not going to give you your stuff back. It was crazy. It's demoralizing. It's degrading. I'm, being treated like a drug addict when I'm not. Anyway, this woman literally wrote in a piece of paper inside a notebook and handed me this notebook, and I opened it up and it said, help, please call the police. I'm being held hostage.
Oh my God.
So here's my phone number. And I have that notebook to this day. And honestly, I asked my mom to call the police in that town where the detox was to just do a care check, a wellness check. I mean, the kind of stuff that I mean, that's traumatic. It was traumatic. I had to demand to be let out of this place. It was so scary. And just one after the other, these kind of things. And I never really deal with them. I just put them behind me because I'm just trying to keep getting well. That's all I can do. It's
I can
really.
relate. I can relate. Well, one thing that I do want to add for the audience and just for myself is where you briefly stated, like, I would have just not slept and not seen a psychiatrist. I would have sought cognitive behavioral therapy. I know that works now. So I would have asked for a referral, and in the meantime, just not sleep. In the meantime, not sleep. But so if you are dealing with like pathological chronic insomnia, that could be an option, to do. So now that you're off, and we've discussed this, I guess a lot of people have the same issue, and I guess I don't necessarily have an answer. Maybe you don't have that either. But we lose so much because of this whole benzo being sick kind of story, and we kind of have to start from scratch. It's I think it's very hard to get back into the workforce. Maybe some people are disabled or have like limitations when they come off. How are you dealing with this whole work or income thing after the taper?
I'm not even dealing with it yet. I'm fortunate I was always putting money away to a retirement account. In this country, we don't really have any kind of social services for what I'm going through. I can't prove that I'm disabled necessarily because this is really hard to prove in this. Also, I'm just not capable of doing that kind of research in the computer and applications and interviews and all that stuff. I
And that's
just,
one of the reasons why Bind would really help us out.
yeah, it really needs to be addressed. But so I've been using my retirement money to keep my paying my bills and things like that. And I'm just fortunate that I do have that because I know that there's probably a lot of people who don't, but then there's also people who have spouses who support them and things like that. So that's good. I just know that I can't go back to work really until I'm much better than I am now. Right now, I'm about 3.5 months out from my end of my taper, and I do think that I am getting better, but it feels like a snail's pace. It's like watching grass grow. It's so slow. It's crazy. I am back swimming. I am, gradually I'm cooking meals for my daughter. I'm shopping. I'm seeing friends and doing small things. I'm doing lots of chores around the house and getting back to tasks that all fell by the wayside when I was so sick. And contemplating like what kind of work I will do. I ran a store for many years, but I closed it in COVID, and then I was running an online shop. But that requires a lot of being really, really on time with shipments and restocking and taking inventory and a lot of kind of stuff that it's really important, customer care and posting and being on social media and just a lot of stuff that I just can't I wouldn't if I started back up I it's like you know if it's like a snowball of momentum, it would just take a life of its own and just grow bigger and bigger, and I don't know if I could manage that, so I'm taking a little bit more time, and maybe this summer, I'm just, like I said earlier, I'm just hoping that I will be well, very well by the end of the summer and back to going to work. And so, like I said, I could worry about all that a lot, and I do. I think about it, but I have to sort of stop myself and bring myself back to being here today and just trying to heal myself. Like, the things that are really damaged in me are my central nervous system and my brain. And if I worry, I just exacerbate my nervous system and I just make it slower healing. So it's kind of a difficult situation to be in. There's a lot of
But I
worries
think it's
about.
great advice. I think it's great advice for the audience. If, someone just jumped and is worrying about certain things, I think that that's great advice.
Yeah,
Try not to worry.
yeah.
Try
I
not to
mean,
worry. Yeah.
try not to worry is like such horrible advice in a way. Like,
Yeah, I know.
good luck with that. But it is more like when you catch yourself worrying, remind yourself that it impedes healing, and so to bring yourself back into like, what can I do today to heal? And what can I actually control through worrying or thinking about it? What can I plan that's realistic? But no, I can't say, if you want to talk to a job counselor, a career counselor, or something like that to get, your resume in order or things like that, but not to apply to a job tomorrow because you're probably not ready. You don't know if you're going to be able to be at work at 9 a.m. 5 days a week forever. But maybe you can take other steps, get your house in order, get your wardrobe in order, get, you're ready when you, so that the day that you feel you are ready to work, you'll have everything ready. Do the things that you can do, and when you catch, that's the main thing. When you catch yourself looping and ruminating, you have to try to redirect into something more rational about what you can actually do.
Great. Yeah. So one question that I'm dying to ask you, because we met through Benzo Buddies. I've met two really, really wonderful people on Benzo Buddies, and you're one of them. And you're now that you're off, and how was your experience with, well, Benzo Buddies? There's probably more forums out there. I only went to Benzo Buddies. What is your take on that now that you're off? Did it help you, or did it was it counterproductive, or
Oh no, it helped me a lot because I think if that didn't exist, whew, I cannot imagine. Benzo Buddies, for anybody who's not familiar with it, is the forum, except for I guess Facebook now has groups, but I'm not on Facebook. But Benzo Buddies is like a website you go to, you register, very simple, very old website, and the functioning is a little old-fashioned, but it doesn't really matter because there's thousands of people on there who were harmed by benzos. I think basically it's amazing that it's there, because what it did was make me understand that what's happening to me is happening to me, because you are so like in the twilight zone, just thinking like, what is happening to me? This is crazy. What is, I must have mental illness or something. Then you go on there and you're like, oh, okay, this is real. These are all kinds of people that are having the same thing. And you're at a point when you go on there, you're at a point where you are like, I could literally, people do it every day. They make a poster just like, I want to kill myself. I can somebody just tell me something nice? Like, really, that's how basic it is. It's, I mean, actually, you're not allowed to say that on Benzo Buddies because it triggers people or whatever, but you basically say like, I'm at the lowest point I could possibly be. I feel hopeless. What will people please, encourage me? And people come out and then say like, hey, we've all been there, or just keep going one more day and stuff. I get choked up just thinking about it, because it really it is important. Of course, we outgrow it to some degree, because when we are on there for a long, long, long time, we finally end up seeing that every nobody can really help you that much, because this is incurable. It only time can help you. Only time can heal you. Only getting off the benzos can heal you. So other people, they can, but they can give you helpful advice. I mean, they really can. And I've been saved in a few ways. Like, when I came out of the detox hospital, and I was on zero benzos, and I didn't sleep for 3 days, and I was just like unbelievably sick. I mean, just like trembling, shaking, just. And I went on there, and I spoke to one friend who said, you have to reinstate. You have to put the benzo back in your body. There's no other way. And I was like, no way, no way, no way. And everybody was like, yes, it's true. And I tried not to, but they were right. You just can't just cold turkey off this medicine. Not, most people can't. So that really like helped me. So there are moments where it really helped me, and I could offer support and help to other people. That's another big thing in this. It's like you feel like such a sponge of need, like, oh, please help me, help me. I'm so needy. And you're telling your friends and your family. I mean, you lose friends over this, because I'm sure they're just like, oh my God, this person is so fucked up. Like, I don't want to deal with them anymore. But you're so sick that you're just like, there's no other thing in your world. You're like, I'm sick, I'm dying. Minutes, every minute of the day, I'm dying. So going on there for one thing is an outlet where you can get out that feeling that you don't want to oppress all your friends and family with. So that's good. Another outlet that makes it so you don't have to constantly be reaching out to people who don't quite understand what's happening with you and are probably exhausted of hearing it. But also being able to like say something nice to somebody else, because you're feeling like it, me, it's all about me, I need help. But when you can offer somebody like, hey, I'm so sorry you're feeling like this, and I, if you ever want to write me a private message, you can, and I'm here to help you. That feels good too. Like,
Yeah, I think that is therapeutic as well. I was like, hi, I'm sick as fuck, and I'm sorry you're sick as fuck too. Let's be sick as fuck together.
exactly. So like, I'm sorry, I actually can't do anything for you, but I am here.
I am here, and sometimes that is enough. Sometimes that
It
is
is.
enough.
It is true. Like, just having somebody say like, you're not alone and stuff, it's a very lonely
And I
experience.
think having some of your peers, you find your people along the way. You are my first person, as you will. You're my first benzo buddy, and we became actual friends. And, just validation, but also, well, next door, just our friendship that I very much cherish.
Me
It's just
too.
also very interesting on how different we react to the benzos and how different our stories are. So it's really interesting. And I, Honestly, I was a bit worried about when you jumped and you weren't doing that well, but we stayed in touch and you're doing so much better now than, when you jumped. So I do see the healing, I see that, and you're doing so much more, and it's like really, well, for me, it's already night and day a difference for you, like what you're doing. So I think that is great.
That's another thing is like when you are in it, the progress is so slow. Sometimes you doubt that you're making progress, but other people usually can see it more, you know, like they can
Yeah,
sense
your first couple of weeks were pretty dark. They were pretty dark to me. And then slowly and surely, I guess it's called Windows then or whatever. But one thing that I also admire a lot from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but pretty soon, even when you were feeling fucked up and tired, you went to the gym and got a personal trainer and everything. You're like, you went for it.
I mean, I lost all of the muscles in my body. It was crazy. Just to look in the mirror, I was like, I just had no muscles to walk upstairs. And that's really important to me, you know, as you get older, you don't want your body to be. I think I had like a defiant attitude about it too, where I was like, I'm not letting this drugs ruin me. I'm just not. I just can't accept that. It has already taken away so much of my time and traumatized me so much. I'm just not gonna let it like take away this strong body that I've always had. You know, and so that was for me like and I love sports and I love athletics, so it's also something I enjoy doing. I'm not just into, like you said, I hired a trainer when I was up in Massachusetts because I really don't know much about like actually rebuilding muscles because I always just played sports and I just stayed strong through having fun. But this time I really needed to understand like how to actually make my legs grow muscles again and stuff. So I did that for like a month and it was really helpful and it made me strong enough to be able to go to swim. And now I'm swimming all the time. And yeah, that to me, some people say in the recovery that exercise is too stimulating for them and it causes them to overstimulate their nervous system. But I think for me, it may do that, but it's worth it to me. I just enjoy it and it's an important distraction and it makes me feel good about myself. And so yeah, I figure like it's a treat when I get to go. And then I've been roller skating and I've been skiing
You
and
have been having fun. You have been doing you, and it's such a delight to see you coming out of this hellhole of, benzodiazepine withdrawal. So that's really a treat for me as a friend, or just as a person, to see that. So, and to wrap up, I mean, you're such a good speaker and you've given so much good advice. But let's touch on, yeah, so before wrapping up, let's touch on the fact that you are my first guest on this podcast series. Remember, I mean, I have a lot of, brain fog and just a lot of memories kind of, blurry because of my taper and everything. I vaguely remember starting the podcast series. I vaguely remember that, but I do remember, how we did it, and I was such a noob and I didn't know about the technical stuff and how to record with someone. I had to figure that out, and I was using another service at the time, but it went really well and it's been listened to a lot of people. So what do you feel about the podcast series, or just podcast about benzos in general? And
Oh, I think it's amazing. I mean, like, I just want to say I'm so glad I met you too. It's very important for me, our friendship, and you know, is we've checked in with each other every couple of days. I mean, who else, you know, could ever understand what we've been through? It's just and I don't like explaining it to anyone anymore. It's so exhausting and just it's just too much. So just having you, I mean, forever we'll be bonded through this, and I can't wait to come see you one day.
Yeah, me either.
But I
Bonded through trauma.
exactly, trauma bond. But I am thrilled that you made this podcast. I think it's so important. I've listened to other ones. They're all really great. I think like people who are in our situation need this so much. We need to feel like what we are experiencing is real, that we're not a bad person. There's a lot of emotions, shame, embarrassment, all kinds of negative emotions that you feel over all the things you've lost and all the traumas you've been through, and why did I take this medication? Why didn't I know better, et cetera. So you coming on and talking about it and discussing it with like all different people from all different walks of life, men, women, and you know, it gives people a sense that like this is not anything we did really wrong. It's just a really, that's actually the medical community and the psychiatric community. They really, really need to look at themselves for what they're doing. They really are not taking responsibility for what happens to people when they get on this medication. And I think, you know, that's the next step. And you know, maybe that'll be addressed in your podcast someday. But for now, I think like you just existing and doing this is awesome. And I think it's a good therapy for you. I think like, you know, it's a source of distraction, it's a source of therapy for your brain. And,
Yeah, and
you
it is
know,
kind of, it's fulfillment,
yeah.
because like you, I'm not very confident to get back into the workforce just yet, maybe not ever, I don't know, but I get to be creative, I get to be productive.
Exactly.
It's
And
my
you're helping.
therapy. Yeah.
You're helping people. You're helping the people who are in those people's lives because they can listen to it. You know, you're educating people on this and spreading the word. So I think like it's amazing. And
And also sharing my fuck ups very candidly, like very candid, like, oh, I did this, that was not good. Like
yeah.
really, yeah.
Well, that's
So
a good thing about podcasts. I remember, I think I said the word fuck on your podcast, and I was like, oh, uh-oh. And then you were like, no, you're allowed to say
thank you
that.
so much for being on, and you're getting a new invite for, let's say, a few months from now, and let the audience know how you've been healing.
Okay, of course. I'd love to. Thank
Thank you
you,
so
Nat.
much.
All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.